And our Phoenix Lights only line, 818-817-0021. Last Friday night when I took the night off because I had to attend a special corporate event before Art's Lifetime Achievement Award event on Saturday, we were giving out coast-to-coast UFO coasters. And they're incredible because when you put your drink on top of it, it lights up. Well, tomorrow we are going to post the Who Does Ian Punnett Look Like? And so tonight, the winners, I'm going to give away two of these coasters. They're incredible. They look like little UFOs. Yeah, Steve wants one. Nope, Steve, I only have two left. We're going to give two of them out, but you have to fast blast me. Tommy will take the first two winners who tell us. You got to guess this, of course. It's all guesswork. You won't know until tomorrow when I post the picture on the website. But you have to tell us who Ian Punnett looks like. So the first two winners will get the coast to coast. What? What are you grimacing about? We'll get the two coast to coast coasters. All right. Back in a moment, we'll take your phone calls. Our special guest, Bill Warwick, on Coast to Coast AM. William, tell me about your conference that you're attending, and then we'll go to the phones.
Sure. I put together a conference specifically for witnesses of the Phoenix Lights. It's going to be on March 31st, which is a Saturday, and April 1st, which is a Sunday, at the end of this month, at the AT&T Auditorium, which is adjacent to the Thunderbird Executive Inn in Glendale, Arizona. And if you would like to buy tickets and you don't have a computer, you can call 1-800-900-7030. And also, we have reservations that you can get at a discount price at the Thunderbird Executive Inn, which is about a 5-minute walk from the auditorium.
Okay, to the phones we go. And don't forget the Phoenix line, 818-817-0021. That line only for those of you in the Phoenix area who witnessed the incredible lights 10 years ago. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, Robert from Tucson.
Hi, Robert. Thanks.
And I'd like to ask your guest if these triangles and boomerangs we have are capable of carrying troops and if we have any craft that we've gone to other planets or solar systems with.
Well, question number one, I would say, one of the strange things about what I saw, and I can only speak about what I saw, and from people that I've talked to, my particular case, you could have had, I would imagine, God. I mean, obviously they've overcome anti-gravity by some technology. You probably could have had, I don't know, 40 M1A1 tanks in that thing, double stacked.
Oh.
You mean it would be able to lift that kind of weight?
Well, I mean, if weight is not an issue, there's no issue. There's no issue.
And of course, they could be troop transport craft too, right?
Yeah, but at some point you've got a law of diminishing returns for the United States government, and I have no doubt that they would try to do something like that if they could, but I don't think that they have five or six of them, although some people think that they do. And I don't know that they can be a mile and a half wide or some of the other craft that we're seeing. So, as far as interstellar travel and stuff like that, I mean, if you can overcome gravity, time, space, and gravity are all the same. You manipulate space-time, you manipulate gravity. You manipulate gravity, you manipulate space-time. So, certainly, all of that's on the table.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to our next call. First-time caller line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George, it's Chris
Hi,
down
Chris.
in DOC.
Ah, you're in California.
Yes, sir. It's been
Okay.
very nice out here. But real quick, I just wanted to thank you for getting me through some real sleepless nights after being paralyzed in an accident.
You are welcome, Chris, and we'll have many more of these for you.
Absolutely. Sir, I just wanted to share a close encounter I had back in 91. I was on a houseboat with my family, and my two brothers and I were asleep, and for some reason, I woke up around 4 a.m. to this massive blue-white craft, and I stood up, got a little scared, and I started calling for my brothers, and they didn't wake. And as soon as I tried to kick their cot, this crap shot off away from me, kind of like diagonally, not straight up or like sideways, but it just kind of went away in a second with no sound. And I was just wondering if you had heard of any sightings in the Lake Mead area.
Lake Mead, California?
Yeah. No. Arizona.
Lake Mead, Arizona.
Yes.
I've read reports, yeah. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but yeah, that seems to be a relative hot spot, as is all of that area.
Absolutely. And also, real quick, I'm a member of the Orange County Relief Fund, and Dr. Bruce McCabe came there about 2 months ago, and he was talking about the Phoenix Lights, and he claimed that the first craft was real, but that the second were flares, which there's no way I believe that because, you know, flares are offset.
Well, you know, the whole flare thing,
yeah.
You know, anyone who saw the boomerangs or who saw the orbs,
yeah.
And the orbs seem to be attached to and part of the boomerangs. They seem to be these, you know, remote-controlled aircraft probes, whatever you want to call them, scout craft,
yes.
That they send out, and then they come back to the mothercraft. I mean, there's multiple videos that have shown this, not necessarily from Phoenix Lights, I don't want to confuse it, but, you know, other videos that I've seen.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I lost you.
I had
a big brain. You got to understand, I got up at 5:30 yesterday morning. I was supposed to talk to
you. You got
to
be used to these hours, Bill.
Oh, my God.
I tell you, they get you.
Absolutely. But I couldn't believe that he said that there were flares.
Yeah, the whole flare, you know, it's such a, because there's no doubt that there were flares there, and I don't doubt that there were orange orbs there, and the orange comes from a plasma effect of the spinning electric field that those orbs are spinning. That's how they keep their, it's part of how they operate. And the different colors that you see is part of the plasma field that's swirling around it. And so when you see that orange plasma field, a lot of times you'll see it swirl. People will describe it looks like it's swirling. And so you have the flares which are dropped to confuse everything. So what happened basically, if you reconstruct the event in a nutshell, Maccabee is right. You've got, and this is why I'm concentrating on the boomerang stuff, which is earlier in mine, and also because I saw the boomerangs, I can relate to it, you know, I can compare it, that the earlier events from, say, 8 o'clock through 9:30-ish, okay, was a boomerang coming from the north to the south, okay? And then later on, apparently it went from the south back up to the north, maybe not necessarily the same craft, but right around 10 o'clock-ish, okay? You know, then we've got the flare drop, okay, which they say the Maryland Air National Guard was there, and we didn't know they were there until 6 months later, and blah, 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 and was dropped by A-10s. I don't doubt that for a heartbeat. The problem that I have with it is that it's a reaction to the earlier events between 8 and 9:30-ish of the boomerangs in Phoenix. And Tucson and whatever, you know, the northern parts of the state. So, yeah, I believe he's absolutely right on the money. And in this most recent flare drop, to confuse people again, I mean, why after 10 years do they all of a sudden have to announce to everyone they're dropping flares?
Yeah, well, they did that, too, in Arkansas.
Yeah.
With an Air Force colonel. Yep.
Yes. So it's the modus operandi. I mean, in the government can't even be creative. They use the same name for the fight as a program that was used, Project Snowbird, that the CIA has already admitted to was a ploy to, you know, make military craft look like UFOs or vice versa.
Didn't HAARP go online in 1997 in Alaska?
This gets even deeper, yes.
This is HAARP, weird.
I'm telling you, it's bizarre. It really is bizarre. All of this came about as a result of my UFO sighting. I never would have discovered any of this if it wasn't for that. HAARP. Developmental prototype, HAARP High Altitude Auroral Research Project. It's ionospheric heater, ionospheric manipulation technology. Okay. What it does is it sends out radio signals, electromagnetic energy, which manipulates the ionosphere. They bounce waves off, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I can get really into this. But basically, yes, February 28th, the developmental prototype array, which is one-fourth the size of the full array, which went online in 1998, started its DP testing. It's called Developmental Prototype Testing. This is all on my website. On February 28, 1997, and stopped on March 14, 1997, the exact beginning and ending dates of the flap.
That's something. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hi there. Hello.
Hello there.
Yeah.
Hi. Sorry about that. That's Robert out in Pacheco, California.
Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
And you guys have basically just stole my wind here, because that's what I was kind of going to talk about.
No.
With these Phoenix lights, it's occurred to me that every time someone shows something on the Phoenix lights, they always focus on those apparent flares, and they typically debunk it by calling them flares.
Yep.
And I do, in fact, think they were flares. But, you know, in that film, Out of the Blue, there's a whole body of people, witnesses that they talk to, who talk about this whole big triangular thing coming overhead and blocking out the stars.
Yeah.
And they don't, no one seems to want to pay much attention to that. Nova, PBS's Nova, dedicated a whole hour to debunking the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they never once mentioned that particular fact. So I think that the flares were indeed a distraction. And to me, they're indicative of some sort of conspiracy going on.
There's no question. It also sort of indicates that they had some preparation, that they, you know, that they knew it was coming. Which, if you kind of think back to what we were talking about with Hubble Space Telescope and their ability to, you know, locate the gamma ray burst so quickly and get a picture of it. And again, remember the gamma ray burst took place on February 28th when HARP went active. Okay, so. You know, I mean, am I the only one that sees this? Please tell me I'm not.
No, you're not. It's,
you know,
it's not just you. Let's go to another caller. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hey, George, how's it going?
Good, sir.
Hey, I'm calling from Norfolk.
Okay.
I got a question for Mr. Warwick.
All right.
Oh, thank you, God. Please tell me you saw this thing.
What street did you mention you saw that at?
I was at the end of Rogers Avenue. I was right in a little neighborhood called Glenwood Park, right off Hampton Boulevard.
Oh, okay. Rogers Avenue. Where, without giving the address, where on that? Because it's not that long of a block.
I don't remember the address. It was 10 years ago. But it was basically at the end. It was all the way at the end. There's about three houses down at the end, and I was at the house that has a pool, and it's got a fence around. So are you familiar with that area?
Yeah, I live on that street.
You live on Rogers?
Yeah.
It was Rogers and Evergreen.
Rogers and Evergreen.
There's a house on that corner. If you go on my website, I've got pictures of the porch that I was standing on.
Oh, it's at the very end of the...
Yeah, Yep.
Oh, unfortunately, I didn't move there until 2000, so I wasn't there when that happened.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was a little skeptical because I don't remember any houses that have any pools in our area there.
It's on the corner. It's on the corner of Evergreen and Rogers. Why don't you go take a swim in it?
Okay. Yeah. And the street lights.
We lost you. They got you. They zapped him.
I think he was talking on the cell phone or something.
They all get zapped, Bill, right when they're ready to say something.
He went for a swim.
East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Bill from Springfield, Massachusetts.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Talk with you again. Hello, old neighbor from Boston.
Yeah.
Bill, I'm glad you rebounded from your job loss. I'm glad to hear that. That's a tough one. I lived in Arizona for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Tucson and Phoenix. And I've seen orbs in the sky. I've seen, and they take off at fantastic speeds. George talked about them before. I've seen one split in half, and they both went in opposite directions. But the Phoenix lights, approaching Phoenix from Tucson, I-10, before it goes into 3 and 4 and 6-lane highways,
mm-hmm.
you're still out in the desert. And as you approach Maricopa County,
mm-hmm.
I think the first town is Chandler, you could start seeing the city, city of Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
and you can see the lights coming in from the north. And there may be, in their boomerang configuration, 6 or 7 bright lights. And these are commercial aircraft coming into Sky Harbor. Mm-hmm. They move at a very slow speed, and I think as they approach as they get close to the airport, I think they turn those bright lights off because of the highway traffic, blinding, et cetera.
But not on landing. If it's on final approach, they shut those lights off.
They go over a lot of highways, I-10, yeah. I-17. There's a lot of residential areas, and I think they trim down those engines so they're not loud, so it's real quiet.
That's what people do, yeah.
I think that's what people are seeing.
No, absolutely not.
Huh?
Absolutely not.
Okay, George.
I'm not saying. Hold on. Let me just
preface this.
I will not doubt that there are unqualified observers who see those lights. What you're talking about. What he's trying to say is that basically, you have on big airplanes, you have a nose wheel and two wheels and a wheel on each wing.
Okay.
And usually, on the nose wheel and those wheels on each wing, you're going to have a huge landing light.
I'm only seeing one light from the distance that I was at, and I don't know how far this doctor was away, but those lights are enormously bright.
Yeah, when they're pointing straight at you, because they're landing lights, they're meant to point straight at you.
Don't forget, I'm way outside, I'm at least 40 miles outside Phoenix still. And I'm watching these things come in. Naturally, as I approach the city limits, I got to start keeping an eye on traffic. But it's a boomerang shape. You can't tell how fast they're going because they're so damn high up in the sky.
Mm-hmm. And are you saying this is happening now, or I'm confused now?
Not now. I when I was living in Arizona, I've seen that several times.
Sure.
My first time seeing this, what are all those lights coming in? Because there's no judge of speed.
Sure. Well, and when you're
just like standing still, and I think they turn those headlights, that one headlight off, because they're going to blind the highways.
Yeah, well, I don't know that could be some kind of special thing for that particular area, but typically when planes are coming in at night, they typically like to have their lights on and be able to see the runway. I think that's pretty much the standing rule.
You know, Bill, I've never seen a UFO, man. I wish.
Are
I
you
used
serious?
To scan the skies. I just have not seen one.
It'll happen soon enough.
One day. I mean, everybody wants me to go up to Jim Gilliland's place up there in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And just sit back at Trout Lake and
I'll tell you where to go. Go to Joshua Tree.
I was in Joshua Tree.
I know you were. I was there too.
Yeah. Did we meet?
I was out partying.
And I was working.
I know.
I'll be back in a moment with you and your final calls on Coast to Coast AM. A couple people now calling the Phoenix hotline. One person, by the way, has guessed who Ian Punnett looks like. I need one more, and you get a Coast to Coast coaster. Once again, if you want to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, yellow flashing banner on the left-hand side of the screen for $22 a month for a one-year commitment. You can sponsor a child with Children International and get a free book of Worker in the Light. Our goal is 350 children on this campaign, so let's do it. Okay, this is our final segment. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to the Phoenix hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Christina from San Diego.
Hi, Christina.
I wanted to tell you that back when the Phoenix lights were happening, I lived in Las Vegas, and my daughter was at a soccer game, and I had picked her up, and as we were leaving, we saw a big boomerang light that was in the northwest part of town. And so we decided to go out there and kind of, it was even further out northwest than we were, and we drove out on the 95 to see what it was. It ended up coming up over us, and so we flipped around on the 95 and like kind of tried to chase it, but it was moving quite slow, and we followed it for quite a while until we got back into town. And then once we got back into town, we couldn't keep following because we were in normal streets. So we stopped and told a friend about it, and they wouldn't come out. They thought we were crazy. Long story short, several months later, we're watching TV, and that's when the thing comes on about the Phoenix lights, and that's exactly what we saw, but we saw it in Las Vegas. And I didn't know if you'd ever heard, it was moving towards the southeast, and this is at about 9 o'clock at night at that point, and Phoenix is southeast from us. So I've ran into one person since then from Las Vegas that had also seen the same thing on that night, and we were able to figure it back, and it was on the very same night that they saw it there. And I just wondered, had anybody ever from Las Vegas told you that they had seen the same thing?
I recall some Las Vegas callers, I believe, even though I think Art just wanted Phoenix callers back 10 years ago. How about you, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's pretty cool that you mentioned that. The email that Peter just sent me, Peter Davenport from Newfork, have you checked their website yet, sweetheart?
Go ahead. She's listening.
Yeah, have you checked their website?
No, go ahead, Bill. She's listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Newfork, National UFO Reporting Agency, just newfork.org. You will find some Nevada sightings there that start at 655, I believe. As a matter of fact, he just sent me an email with that other stuff that he sent me about the Clinton thing. That said, that I believe was Henderson, Nevada. Is that where she's from? That began at 6:55, if I recall correctly.
Huh.
Yeah. And actually, a similar sighting occurred the night before on March 12th, which was the same night as mine. So, again, you have these sort of – there's more than one of these there appears to be, obviously. And yeah, that's – if you haven't made a report, ma'am, please go to newfork.org and make a report. Because it's important that we document these things to try and reconstruct these events for everyone.
West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah.
My name is James. Thank you, Screener, and you guys for taking my call.
Sure.
I live, at the time, I was with my friend. It was north of Phoenix, Deer Valley way, before all the houses went up to watch the sky. I just can't help it. Point out things to everybody, but it was the first time he ever saw a satellite, and it was really cool. This is 3 days before. Well, my mom and dad saw the Phoenix light. It busted their video camera. But 3 days before?
Wait. What busted the video camera? The lights?
The Phoenix lights.
How'd that happen?
I don't know. We've taken so many pictures of different things that keep busting cameras, some of them.
That's weird.
We bought him a new one, and I won't take any more pictures. But 3 days before, sir? 3 days before, me and my friend, well, it was the first satellite he ever saw. I couldn't believe it, you know. And so I was looking away, and he said, oh, look at that. And I looked back up, and it started sparkling like a meteorite that is exploding. I mean, it's just, it was incredible. It came down, and it caught the sunlight right where the cusp of the light circles the Earth, you know, so it wouldn't cast any shadow on the Earth. And, well, from my military training, I'm a trained observer, and this thing was so huge, you could see the sun reflected off of the ocean onto the bottom of it, and it just hovered there for hours, and it had to be at least, I've never seen it. You know, I've guarded C-135As and things.
Would you say it was at least a mile?
I'd say it was 25 miles big.
25 miles? No, that's
this thing was clear up from a satellite, and by the time it came down, it was catching a reflection of the ocean from Arizona to the west. This was 3 days beforehand.
You're talking about 3 days before March 13th?
Yes, and this thing was... I mean, if that thing came out of anywhere, it had to come out of this thing.
What shape was it?
It was,
triangular?
It's more of a rectangular.
You know,
but it was kind of effervescent. It was kind of like shimmering on the bottom. Like, you could see the orange sun rays coming up. So, you know, so, like I said, it could travel to the whole circumference of the Earth and still not cast a shadow. This thing was huge. It is the most incredible. I've seen, well, I've actually shown hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, even the police whenever they're around. I stop everybody to show them different things. I can't help it. I don't know why I see these, but this was the most incredible thing that I've ever seen 3 days beforehand. I missed the Phoenix lights. I saw something the day before that, but 3 days before that, from the height of a satellite, a little pinprick of a moving star, until it came down and settled right on the cusp of a, you know how I'm saying, how the curvature.
Well, it kind of reminds me, Bill, on how yours came down.
It sounds to me like he's talking about something totally different.
Well, 25 miles, pretty big craft. I don't know if it's that big, but
you know, the only thing, and if what you saw was not
a mistaken, you know, piece of spacecraft, or, and this was in 1997, so ISIS wasn't up. And I don't recall if the space shuttle was up, because if it's rectangular, it can only, you know, if it's a space object, it can only be.
Yeah, but he said it was 25 miles long.
Yeah, it's hard to judge distance. The only thing I could compare it to, and again, this would get into, you know, the conspiracy theory back then, was the objects that appeared to be breaking off of Comet Hale Bopp are estimated to be about 25 kilometers long.
Even if he was wrong by 20 miles, it's 5 miles big,
yeah.
You know, and that's
you know,
still a lot.
It's not unprecedented. If you recall the pictures that were taken of the craft, the rectangular craft that was docking with Phobos by, you know, the Popovich pictures.
Yes.
That was estimated to be about 25 kilometers long, and certainly huge cylinders have been reported for years and years and years, you know, throughout history. I mean, I think there was one even reported in the 1890s in Norfolk, like it's supposed to be the first UFO sighting in modern history off the coast of Norfolk, by the way. 400 miles off the coast of Norfolk, that these huge cylinders have been sighted. So, it's bizarre.
Let's go to our first time caller line. Your turn. Hi there.
Yeah, my name's Dwight. First time caller. This is a very unusual kind of a situation. I was coming home from a camping trip, and this was a week before the Phoenix Light.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my son, I have a witness, he was sitting with me, and it was about 1 o'clock at night, and we're coming, kind of prefaced this, we were coming from, we were going east, it was down Camelback, where I live in Paradise Valley, we were coming down Camelback and going east, and this ship came off the mountain, off of Camelback Mountain, and again, this was a week prior to the Phoenix Lights,
yep.
And it was probably the size of maybe 2 football fields.
Yep.
And it was maybe at the most treetop level.
Yep.
And I'm driving down. I'm going down my street at this time, going towards Camelback Mountain. And the thing couldn't have been going any faster than maybe 5 miles an hour, because I was going 10 miles an hour at this time.
And what shape was it?
It was in the... could have been a boomerang shape.
Mm-hmm.
And
when it's low to the ground, it'll look like a cylinder, because if I hadn't seen it fly over my head, I never would have described it as a boomerang. I would have described it as a cylinder, because if I hadn't seen it from below, you know what I mean, when it was up high?
Right.
So if you only saw it from one perspective, you could easily describe that as a cylinder, because it would look like a rectangle. You wouldn't...
Well, The most unusual part was that it was moving towards me very slow,
yeah.
and there's no sound.
Yeah.
And we both looked at it, you know, how kind of like in Close Encounters, it's going over the top of your truck, and we're both looking up at it.
Yeah.
Is that an airplane getting ready to land, or what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So we stopped the truck and jumped out and watched it go over us, and it went over and banked, and then it just... Boom! It took off, just like it was gone.
Yeah, that's a common report. That same report has been described. I've talked to people, Mike Fortson, Captain Trig Johnston, you know, and a lot of other people have had that same exact report. Let me ask you a question. When that thing when I saw my boomerang go over the streetlights, it didn't affect the streetlights. It didn't affect anything. I always had the idea, like you said, Close Encounters, when the UFO goes over a light, you know, the car is going to start turning on, and, you know, things are going to stop blinking. There was no effect on anything. Did you have any effects whatsoever that you noticed on anything? And how close did it actually get to you? Do you estimate that it was actually at its closest point?
It had to be maybe 50 feet above us.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
pretty
close. It was right there. It was like, and then of course I know Jim De La Tosa, who's here in town, mm-hmm. and I told him about it, and he's the one that did the Phoenix Light thing here, and he was going nuts about it, and I'm going, and then some other people told us, well, why don't you go out by the Australian mountains? You'll see UFOs out there all the time, and I'm going, what are you talking about?
Yeah, Alice Springs. Yeah.
So there's just a lot of crazy things going on here in Phoenix, and And I was also a witness of the Phoenix Lights when they came in, and I saw them here too. But this was the most, this was happened. It was like I was getting these encounters all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. One this week, and then the following week they have the Phoenix Lights, and
this is indicative of the fact that, like, the whole flare thing, all the attention has been focused on the 10 o'clock flare drop. And really, you have a whole series of events that occurred before, during, and leading up to March 13th.
And what's so remarkable is so many people witnessed this.
Listen, I've talked to Frances Bauer for hours, okay, and the former councilwoman of I just love her to death. She's
Phoenix,
my hero.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, she is my hero. And you know that a lot of stuff came by her desk, okay? And she spoke personally spoke to, over a period of months, returning messages, 700 people that were describing the same exact thing.
Yeah, and she was really, really diligent taking care of these.
She is such a straight shooter, okay? I mean, you know, she is such a public servant, and I love her to death.
Didn't she run for Secretary of State, but she didn't make it Arizona?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, the only, she's standing up for you guys in Phoenix. I wish to God I had one person that would come forward and corroborate my signing. One person did anonymously. You guys have got hundreds, all right? The whole world is looking at you right now and wondering what you're going to do. What are you guys going to do about this?
Let's go back to the Phoenix hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, George.
Hello.
Hi. I lived in Kingman, Arizona. Oh, by the way, my name is Lori, and I'm calling from San Francisco.
Okay, Lori.
I lived in Bullhead, but I worked in Kingman, Arizona. And on the night that the Phoenix sightings occurred, unbeknownst to me, because I was working and didn't hear it on the news or anything, this was about 11 o'clock at night, and I was driving home, and I saw what appeared to be like a, I would say like a pancake kind of with a hump in the middle, like a lumpy pancake,
mm-hmm.
kind of light. I can't really estimate how far away it was, but it was going, I believe it was in the southwesterly direction. And it was going, it caught my attention because it was very, very bright, but also the fact that it was going very slow.
Yeah.
And then I heard about the lights and everything, but there are some strange occurrences happening out in Arizona. I've had my whole house be lit up by a blue light, and there's no, like, cars or anything out there that would cause that. This happened twice. One time I actually saw, like, a trail after this light that occurred. And so I go with all the people that saw that. There's lots of stuff going on in Arizona.
Yeah, there's no question that Arizona is a hot spot. I mean, there's just absolutely no question. You know, if you go to, like, any UFO reporting agency, but I like New Fork because it's, like, it's straight, it's there, the times are there. Peter really does a good job on trying to get as much accurate information as possible to reconstruct these events. If you haven't, and any, this is for any of your listeners, you know, George, let me say this again. If you've seen something and you haven't reported it, report it. It's the number one thing you can do to help figure out what's going on. Because if you don't report it, nobody knows about it. For every one person that has come forward and reported a UFO sighting in Phoenix, there are 10 that haven't. Because we only know about a handful of them, like Mike Fortune and Trig Johnston and Tom, you know, Bill Hamilton. I mean, you know, the whole group that we've all heard about. I know their stories. I know the stories backwards, forwards, insides, and out. I want to know about the 9 stories and the 9 people that we've never heard of.
Let's take one or two more final calls, and that'll be it. East of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hello, this is Nancy from Chattanooga.
Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I have a question for your guest. In 1979, my husband was doing his twilight tour at the shipyard, and we lived in Craddock.
Yeah, Craddock.
In the back is the ammunition depot.
Yep.
Well, we were coming home, and it was about almost midnight, and we were on the steps, and we looked out, and we saw this huge red orb of some kind, like it was falling to Earth, and it was coming from the South Norfolk area, the back of the ammunition depot.
Do you know, when you say the ammunition depot, are you talking about Craney Island?
Craney Island.
Oh, my God. Did it swirl?
No, it was like it was falling to earth. And so we jumped in the car to chase it. And then, of course, it kept going down and down and down, and we didn't see it. But about 2 weeks later, there was a little blurb in the paper, not even an article, but a blurb that said there had been UFO sightings around.
This same thing that you described was actually reported in the Suffolk Sun. I can't remember the date. It's in. I'll get into my webpage for you. I've got like 20 gigabytes to get in there. But listen, yeah, it's been reported. I've seen a huge round glowing object above Craney Island.
Hey, Bill,
you know what I'm talking about, right?
Get your website out and briefly tell us about the conference, and we got to run.
Sure, not a problem. The conference is in Glendale, Arizona. It's for witnesses. It's called Eyewitness 2007. You are not alone. I am a witness. It's produced by me. I'm financed by me specifically for witnesses. We've got Native American speakers that are coming. You're going to talk about the Hopi prophecies and their relationship to UFOs.
I like that stuff.
Yeah, Guillermo. Did you meet Guillermo at Joshua Tree?
I think I did.
He's a really good friend of mine, and he's going to be coming and talking about stuff that you probably have never heard before. And it's March 31st in Glendale, Arizona, and April 1st at the Thunderbird Executive Inn, where you can rent a hotel if you need to stay over. And there's a 5-minute walk to the AT&T Auditorium. If you need to buy tickets and you don't have a computer, it's 1-800-900-7030. Again, that's 1-800-900-7030, or you can go to SiriusSeminars.com, S-I-R-I-U-S, Seminars, S-E-M-I-N-A-R-S.com, or TheNorfolkIncident.com.
Very good. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you being on the program. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. By the way, we have two people have picked the Ian Punnett lookalike, so we'll post the pictures tomorrow. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.